Okay, welcome to another episode of Epochs of the Lotus Eaters, and this time I'm joined by a special guest, Mr. Mark Meacham, otherwise known as Count Dankula. How are you, sir?
That's good, man. No one can ever pronounce my surname correctly.
Oh, how do you say it?
Meakin.
Meakin. Do apologise.
It's fine. Everybody gets it wrong. Even though I've been friends with Sargon for fucking years, he still pronounces it incorrectly.
Well, I would prefer to call you Mark, if that's okay. I mean, you know, people do know you as Count Dankula, of course, but, you know, we are real people. I mean, sometimes I think people forget, you know, they get so consumed by their sort of online alter ego or their avatars or whatever, that they sort of lose their real selves. But it's one of the things Cole likes, is that people actually come on and, you know, use their real names and all that sort of thing.
I know, with me, if I'd have known that my channel was actually going to go places, I would have chosen a better fucking name, man. Like, God's sake. Count Dankula.
It's funny.
Doesn't exactly command respect, does it?
It's funny, though. I mean, it sticks in people's mind. I think it's kind of funny. I think Carl has said the same thing about Sargon of Akkad, that if he'd known, you know, yeah, he probably wouldn't have chosen that. But no, fair enough. So thank you for your time. I thought we could just talk a fair bit just about your Mad Lad series, because I'm a fan. I think it's really good. And it's gone down well. The internet seems to be a fan of it, aren't they? So, there's a fair few crossovers. I mean, because a lot of them are really, it's a historical figure. So it's actually a little bit of a crossover with some of the epochs, the history stuff we do here at Lotus Eaters. And in fact, there are two, Vlad the Impaler and Alcibiades, the Athenian. We've actually done both. So, I just would like to pick your brain about a few of them, if that's all right with you.
No, that's fine. I love talking about like mental people from history. You know, the Mad Lad title. One thing I like to make clear, though, is just because someone is a mad lad doesn't mean that they are a good person. You know, sometimes they are. Sometimes they are. You know, we had like Mad Jack Churchill, the World War II hero, and stuff like that. You know, like we had Bob Ross, you know, like fun, happy people. And then you have General Butt Naked, who used to literally sacrifice children. or Vlad the Impaler, who used to impale babies to their mother's breasts. You know, it's... Yeah, so just because someone's a mad lad doesn't mean they're a good person. Just want to make that clear.
The Killdozer guy is a good human, in my opinion. Some of them aren't even people at all, are they? Because you've got a fair few, like Gustav the alligator and Rags, the World War One dog, who's a good boy, and World War One pigeon, and all sorts of things. Yeah, they're really good. Well, that was one of the things I wanted to ask you sort of early on, or first, really, is how do you pick which ones you do? Is it kind of read whatever sort of, piques your interest, or is it people give you lots of suggestions and you just pick one that you like, or how do you go about that?
There's certain, I like reading up a lot about history and stuff like that, but I like the mad shit. And the way it works is if I decide when someone makes it onto the list, where if someone goes, oh, have you heard about this guy? He did X, Y, Z. And like, for example, one of the examples I can give is a general during like Industrial Revolution China. So you're talking about like late 1800s, like early 1900s type era, where you just had a bunch of warlords and everything like that. And it was a guy called Zhang Zongchang. And he led an army, and he says to his men, to the town he was defending, I forget the name of it, where, I will go out here and I will win this battle against the enemy. If not, I will come back in a coffin. Right. And he went out and he lost the battle, but he was still alive. So what he did was he got his men to still parade him through the streets in a coffin while he lay in it smoking a big cigar. Right. And now when someone told me that, my reaction, and this is the reaction that decides a mad lad, my reaction was, fuck off, that never happened. and then I read up on it, researched it, and went, holy shit, that actually fucking happened. He did in fact do that. And that is what usually gets someone into the list of mad lads. And I've got my big, very secret, hidden away list of all the mad lads that I want to do. Yeah, right. And whenever I decide what mad lads I'm going to do that month, I go, what am I in the mood for? Right, and I'll go, okay, eeny, meeny, okay, a little bit of that, little bit of psychotic cult, little bit of dictator here, you know, I just sort of choose who I want from the list, so that's how I decide.
Right, cool. Because some of them are just sort of out and out, sort of evil baddie type figures, like Vlad the Impaler, for example.
Yeah.
And, but a lot of them are actually just, well, they're Chads.
Yeah.
There's more than one video where you're like, the absolute chaddery of this guy is just off the charts. And so, well, the first one you did was that Dragon Lord, and you actually did a part two to Dragon Lord, didn't you? And this was one of the reasons why I love the series, because some of them are, you know, really quite famous figures, like, say, Vlad the Impaler or Jack Churchill. It was quite well known, but others completely not. Like, I had never heard of Dragon Lord. There's a fair few of them that are quite obscure. I'd never heard of Purple Aki before your video. And so some of them, even though I'm a history nerd, you don't know it. No one can know anything or even remotely. So a lot of them, I hadn't even heard of. And so so I'd like to ask you about Dragon Lord, just that you don't spend much time. In fact, please don't spend too much time on it. But why that? You know, the first one you're going to do, and you picked him. Were you just sort of into his story at the time when you started the series or something?
It was, I'd heard about him now. I didn't have it at that point when I was writing and making that video, and even when I uploaded that video, I didn't have a series in mind.
Right.
I just thought, this is an interesting subject that I think people would like, because this guy is like, he's considered like the biggest lol cow in Germany. Right. And I'm going to soon start working on a part three, because he's actually just been sentenced to prison.
Oh, has he?
Yeah, he's been sentenced to 2 years in prison. He's also sold the dragon bunker. He sold his house. He basically went, okay, I'm going to move out. I'm going to sell it. And everyone in the village that he lives in chipped in together to buy the house to get rid of him.
Oh, God.
Right. And he used the money to buy a Ford Ranger. He has no house. He has no house, but he bought like one of the brand new like Ford Ranger pickup trucks that he now lives in. And it took about maybe like 2 days before someone managed to get the license plate for it and everything. So nobody knows what he's doing, but apparently it's pending like background reports, blah, blah, blah. He's going to be going to prison soon for about 2 years. But I just thought his whole story was an interesting subject, and I thought this would make a funny video. I did it. And then I had people saying, this was really, really good. You're very good at telling like a story and stuff like that. So you should maybe do more about it, like make it a series. And I thought, oh, this is something, because at first it was my whole the anti-SJW stuff, right? You know, which we were all like very, very into years ago. And then I went, I'll do this as a little like side project, a little bit of fun, because my anti-SJW stuff was just, here's why free speech is fucked now, here's why it's fucked this week, here's another arrest, here's another law, and I was just blackpilling the shit out myself. So I thought, this would be fun, this would be a little bit of dopamine for myself. But then I went, it needs a name, and I thought, because someone says, oh, you should just do, I can't even remember who it was that said it to me, you should just do like videos on like absolute mad lads, and that's when I went, there we go. And then I started doing it, and then it ended up becoming like massively popular, and I fucking love doing it. It's my favorite type of content to make.
Yeah, well, that's great. Yeah, while you were talking there, I had about 3 or 4 things I wanted to ask you, but I want to ask you about where you say like the research and the writing side. So I don't want to talk about this too much, because it might not be all that interesting for the listeners, although I hope that it is, but I'm interested. Do you do all the research yourself and write a script and then just read the script, or when I do epochs with Carl quite often, I've got all my quotes ready. I've got sort of a brief outline of the narrative, but it's essentially sort of 80-90% all in my mind. And I just spiel it out as a conversation, like deliberately having it in mind to have it sort of flow and not be too static or anything. But other people at Lotus, they write scripts and just read the script, say just as whatever you want to do. But so I just wondered how you do it. Do you do all the reading and research yourself, or how does it go?
I used to do all the reading and research myself. It was all research and everything. And I basically would write out the full script, which I would then say like word for word.
Right.
So I do use a teleprompter, but back, because obviously there's a lot of information, because one thing that I was doing back when I'll just memorize it, I was getting dates wrong and everything. And it's a video about a historical thing, you can't get the fucking date wrong like that. That's why I thought, no, I need a teleprompter so that I stay on topic, stay on cue, and don't mix stuff up. So I used to all the writing, researching, like filming the video, editing the video, that was all me at the start. I did all of that myself, but now I've got a team of writers and researchers and everything who they write like the initial script, And then I essentially go through the whole thing and rewrite it to the way that I like it. Right. So, because I micromanage in that way. It annoys the writers and they're like, why are we here? And I went, you know, just to do the busy work, you know. But they do really, really good work. So that's what I do now. I get the writers write the initial research and the script, and then I go through it and restructure it all and write it to the way I like it. Then I film it, and then it's my editor who now edits the videos. So there's a full team of us now producing these, which is why instead of doing two, maybe three videos a month, we can now do like five, like big hour-long ones, because there's now a whole team working on them.
Yeah, yeah. So like the Aleister Crowley one, for example, was you know, sort of feature length, wasn't it? And then you've also got like mini Mad Lads as well. And well, one thing, I don't want to sort of be too sycophantic or blow smoke up your ass too much, but you are a good storyteller, I do think. You know, it's all very well just to say, oh, here's a script about somebody interesting from history. And 9 people out of 10, you give them that script and they'll read it, and it won't be engaging. It'll be boring. It won't be. So there is a skill. There's a real skill to being engaging and being that people want to listen on. I feel like straight off the bat, you know, you were able to do it. So
There's a technique to it where I describe it to the writers, where I say, you have to write this and present this. And this is the way I operate when I'm filming as well, is you have to write this and present this like you've got 3 pints in you and you're telling your mate a story down the pub.
Right.
So it's basically you've got all the guys that are around the table and they're listening to you, and you don't want to come across as embarrassing or boring or anything like that. You need to make sure everyone at the table is fully engaged with you. That's how you present it. Don't present it like a university lecturer, you know, like presenting a thesis or something like that. You're with your friends down the pub and you're telling them a funny and engaging story. That's how I try and present it, and it works because people really fucking enjoy it. And that's how I do it in my real life as well. I'm one of these guys where, even though I've told you a funny story before, I'll just tell you it again because I forgot I already told you. I do that all the fucking time with people.
Now, that's like a great angle, or a great thing to have in mind, that you're just chatting to some mates in the pub. Because I watch, you probably imagine, I watch all sorts of lectures and by sort of professional historians, and they're nearly always so terribly dry. I mean, I'm used to it, and I can, you know, I have all sorts of, you know, went to uni. You're used to lectures, but they're not great storytellers. They might be great minds. They might have a vast swathe of knowledge in rattling around in their head, but they're terrible at telling a story. So they're just this really dry talking head, just droning on and on monotonously. And for most people, that's not engaging. So to have a little bit of sort of, you quite often use, you know, really colloquial language, or sort of internet type speech. I don't know how else to say it. But it works really well. I mean, you've got quite a few now, isn't it? Actually, I was surprised. I haven't watched every single one, but I've watched probably 80-90% of them. And we're up to sort of, 85, 86 now. It's quite a few, isn't it? It's quite a body of work.
I'm going to check my playlist because I actually don't know how many I've done. 85, fucking hell, I've done 85 Mad Lads.
Yeah, it's excellent. It's an excellent body of work. I wondered, might be a bit of a weird or silly question where there's no answer to it, but do you have a favourite, or is there one that, you know, maybe sticks out in your mind as I really enjoyed researching and writing that one?
I know who my least favorite Mad Lad is, and that was Uday Hussein. That was miserable to write. That was miserable to film. But I thought the lesson behind it was very important, because the whole lesson was, this is what happens with an unchecked government. Right? This is what happens. This should be avoided at all costs. And in order to, you know, scare people a little bit into agreeing with that, you need to talk about some of the horrific things that can happen under unchecked, you know, supremely authoritarian governments. And Uday Hussein was just a monster, an absolute monster. I always go as far as to say that Uday Hussein would be as more evil than Hitler, right? He just didn't have the means. Even his own father, who was Saddam Hussein, by the way, another evil man, even he was like, yeah, you're not getting the crown after I go, because you're far too fucked up. And if even Saddam Hussein is saying, wow, that's a bit too far, buddy, like, you know, you're a bad guy. Like, you know, you're just fucking terrible. But yeah, like, so he was my least, but there's been some where filming it was a lot of fun and writing and researching it. And one of the ones as well, that too, is, I'd probably say this is one of the funniest ones, was Ken Allen, the orangutan, the really intelligent orangutan that keeps escaping from his enclosure. And even while I was writing it, I was laughing. But then when I was filming it and saying the things out loud, like especially the part where he was separated from his original enclosure because he kept fighting with another male called Otis. So Ken got put in his own enclosure. Then he escaped from that enclosure. And when the zookeepers were trying to find him, he was up in a tree that was overhanging Otis's enclosure, and he was hitting Otis with bricks. Right, and just when I said that out loud, I just started pissing myself laughing, and I just kept all those takes in the video. So I'm trying to tell the story and I can't keep a straight face because of this fucking orangutan that's taking the complete piss out the zookeepers. So that was one of the funnest ones. But then you get other ones as well that like just take you down a rabbit hole and you discover things that you had no idea about before. Like, for example, one of the ones as well was Zhu Xiaodong. He is the Chinese MMA fighter. Oh, yeah. This basically says all this kung fu hiya crap is useless and it's not of no use whatsoever in a real fight. All of like China's kung fu masters all stepped forward and says, I will show you that my wushu is the most superior in all of that's it. Like the fucking plot of any kung fu movie, they all stepped forward to face him and he just beat the shit out of every single one of them, and some of them never even got a punch in because he was just proving, yeah, all this kung fu stuff's a lot of crap. And I loved him as well because it was, I didn't know how hard the Chinese government came down on him because they saw him as destroying Chinese culture, which under the Chinese government is a very, very big no-no. So he has sort of almost been beaten down to the point where he had to give up his dojo because the Chinese government kept sending in like fire inspectors and health and safety inspectors like every week. See how you usually get a visit like once every 4 years or something? They were sending them into him every week and constantly failing him and stuff till it got to the point where he went, oh, fuck it, I'll just sell the place then. He's still not allowed to stay in hotels. He's not allowed to use trains. He's not allowed to use so many public services. He's not allowed to rent an apartment. And that's how bad it is.
Well, yeah. Because he showed that kung fu is sort of a nonsense.
Yes.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.